UK Wine Show number 189 for the 8th of January 2009. Masters of Wine with Isabel Lecheron. G'day and welcome back. I hope you had a great break and we're back into our regular shows at last. 2 weeks off, that's been pretty good. Well, almost 2 weeks. I hope you didn't miss me too much, and I'd love to say that I've been on holiday kicking back, but sadly, I've been beavering away, working away. I will finally be able to announce what I've been working on next week, but it's all very exciting, so hopefully stay tuned for that. But let's crack on to this week's show. This week, we're looking at wine education. Always like to do that at the beginning of the year, just after those New Year's Eve resolutions are made. We start out this week by talking with Isabel Lecheron. Isabel has recently completed her Masters of Wine, and we're going to be talking to her about the course. You may recall we spoke to her about 3 years ago as she was just starting her Masters of Wine back in show number 34. Wow, that was a long time ago. We find out if the course was what she was hoping and how she's got on. In this week's show, we have our news in our spotlight, which is going to be looking at the poll. What type of fizz were you drinking over Christmas? And as usual, we have our mystery wine region. As usual, I'll give you two sets of clues, one in a moment and the other one just before the interview. See if you can work out what region it is, and I will give you the answer at the end of the show. So here's our first clue for the mystery wine region. Our wine region has deep sedimentary soil and contains a mixture of fine textured loam and clay and loam silt, bordered by medium textured volcanic soil in the foothills. Melting snow from the Andes, which carries the water to the valley, which can be used to irrigate the vines. Like the rest of the country, our mystery region is free of phylloxera, and it's planted with about 18,000 hectares of vineyards, with prominent varieties including Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Carmenera, Serra, and a wee bit of Malbec, as well as some Chardonnay, Semillon, and Sauvignon Blanc. Within the mystery region is the Abtalta Valley, which produces some of Chile's best Cabernet Sauvignons and Syrah Reds. Okay, so that's the first set of clues. Obviously, it's a Chilean wine region, but we'll give you some more clues just before the interview with Isabel. But coming up next is the news with Jane.
Thank you, Chris. Majestic Wines saw a surge in sales over the Christmas period after the collapse of First Quench in November. They have reported an 11.7% increase in like-for-like sales in the 9 weeks to 4th of January, fueled by champagne and Prosecco. Chief Executive Steve Lewis said he was delighted with the sales increase and encouraged by their customers' response to the reduction in the minimum purchase to 6 bottles. The volume of transactions was up and the number of customers trying Majestic for the first time increased substantially. City analysts said the new 6-bottle minimum purchase had helped to entice former Thresher customers to Majestic for the first time.
I'm sure that some of the Majestic sales are associated with the failure of Wine Rack and Threshers. The old saying is that the strong get stronger and the weak go under in a recession. Well, I think it's an old saying. I just read that First Quench, the owners of Threshers and Wine Rack, went into debt owing £41 million to unsecured creditors, with the likes of Diageo, who are a pretty big drinks company, owed £2 million, and even small agencies such as Hatch Mansfield, the importers of Villa Maria, owed a cool £800,000. Those that survive are getting stronger. But the thing about the wine industry is it's relatively easy for a passionate person to enter. I was just talking to one of my neighbours who's going to be taking over one of the Wine Rack stores that's currently snowed in Twickenham. So it's pretty easy for people into the trade. Now, we may be experiencing a cold snap in the UK, probably the coldest for about 30 years, but the summer was a bumper. What's the next story, Jane?
Well, as 2010 begins, the 2009 vintage in England is being hailed as one of the best ever by a number of winemakers and possibly the best of the decade. Volumes are looking to be considerably higher than the last 2 years and could even exceed the record figures for 2006 of 3 million bottles. The year began with very little frost in the vineyards, followed by a near-perfect period of warm late spring and early summer weather during flowering. A wet July bringing much-needed moisture to the vines gave way to a warm autumn, prolonging the growing season, and across the country the fruit quality was exceptional, with high sugar levels and good acids. But we'll have to wait a few months before we can taste the 2009s, and longer yet for the sparkling wines, until 2011-2012. And as Mike Roberts of Ridgeview summed it up, 2009 was all in all a fantastic year and a pretty wonderful build-up for the London Olympics.
I'm not sure if it was the best vintage of the decade. 2003 was a pretty good vintage. But certainly the weather was kind to the vineyards, and it rained at the right time, just what the doctor required. Oz is still looking for some of that rain, but a load of grape growers are losing contracts. Isn't that right, Jane?
Yes, Australia's biggest buyer of wine grapes, Constellation Wines, has advised 300 growers in the Murray Valley that their contracts will be terminated after the 2012 vintage. Previously, Constellation had given 3 years' notice to more than 200 growers back in December 2008. Growers in the region in South Australia have been facing plummeting wine grape prices, in some cases 50% less for their grapes than in 2008. But Constellation had warned growers at a forum in June to expect the company to cut grape intake by at least one third to combat the recession. That's it from me this week, but don't forget to check out our website, 3050.co.uk.
It's not been a good recession for Constellation, the world's largest wine company, and based on the old Hardy's company. The dropping of contract growers just shows who ultimately carries the risk in wine production. Not the buyers of the grapes, but the growers. While Constellation started in contract growers' contracts way back in 2007-2008, and this is just another iteration of that, they have been giving 3 years' notice, which is plenty of time for most businesses. And it's certainly not the same situation as back in 1977, when Saltram Wines instructed their head winemaker, Mr. Peter Lehman, to dump their contract growers. Peter, who famously refused to do so and break his word to the growers, set up what was to become Peter Lehman Wines, and created a massive competition to the once dominant company. The dropping of contract growers will give other companies a fresh impetus, even if it's going to be highly painful to some growers in the short term. Okay, that pretty much ends this week, and next up we've got the spotlight. This week we're looking at our December poll, which was, what type of sparkling wine will you mostly be drinking to celebrate Christmas? We asked the same question last year, and comparing 08 to 09, champagne dropped from 62 to 57%, Carver dropped from 11% to 9%, other sparkling wine went from 14% to 10%, Prosecco 7% to 11% up, and I won't be drinking fizz, the big winner, it's going from 6% up to 13%. As said, this is the second time we've run this question, and it's hard to imagine that at the end of 2008, when we all thought we were cutting back heavily, we still thought we would be drinking more champagne than the end of this year. Champagne saw a relative drop of 5% to 57% of people quaffing the French stuff. The big winner, Prosecco, gaining 4%, but the biggest winner of all was those not drinking fizz at all, rising from 6% to 13% in 2009. What a shame. Fizz is a great drink, and even the relatively simple tank method used in Prosecco still makes some light, fun fizzes. But for the serious wine buff, I prefer wines made to the traditional method, such as Carver, Champagne, and most New World producers. It's quite nice looking back at the poll, because at the end of 2008, I did have some predictions, and I predicted that 2010 won't see a return to normal growth, but would be relatively flat until the 2012 Olympic bump kicks in. I still hold by this, which is quite good. Nice and foresight there. It's always good when you put your name out there and say something, it comes through, or it may come through anyway. In our business, we've held up exceptionally well over the course of the recession, but we're still predicting a relatively flat year compared to 2009. Roll on the Olympics, that's what I say. Excellent. Right. In a minute, we're going to be interviewing Isabel Legeron about her Masters of Wine course, but we've got our second clue in our mystery wine region. So this is the second clue. See if you can work out what mystery Chilean region we're talking about. Our mystery region is a sub-region of the Rapel in Chile's Central Valley. Located about 80 miles southwest of Santiago, it's about 75 miles long and averages 22 miles wide. It enjoys long growing season with its dry, balmy Mediterranean climate, clear air and abundant sunshine, and the average annual rainfall, which occurs mostly in the winter months of May to August, is about 24 inches. Humidity is low and frost is unknown. As a Pacific maritime breeze sweeps up the coastal mountain range into the valley and then across the Rapel Lake and follows the river inland, tempering the effects of the hot summer sun and leading to cool, crisp nights. Right, that's your last clue. The answer will be after this week's interview, which is with Isabel Legeron, one of the newly minted Masters of Wine and the person we interviewed 3 years ago as she was starting on this very tough course. Let's have a listen to Isabel and what she has to say about the Masters of Wine course. Hi, I'm here with Isabel Legeron. How are you, Isabel?
Oh, I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. Second time on the show.
Mm-hmm.
We had you on when you were just getting into your Masters of Wine, and now big lady, full Master of Wine, everything.
I'm on the other side of it, yeah.
Yeah, on the other side of the fence. So that's brilliant. Mm. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Excellent. What we're going to do, the first time we interviewed you, we just sort of talked a wee bit about what you'd done, and I think it'd be quite nice, I thought, to just see how, looking back, how you felt the Master of Wines went. When you first started, was it what you anticipated?
Okay, sure. So I've done, I guess the study took me 4 years. Mm-hmm. I did like a first year, second year, sat the exams, and then I've been sort of writing the dissertation, and I only literally just passed. So yes, this is a
did
bit of a news.
Did you pass your exams first time? Or?
I did. I was a provisional pass, which in effect means that I passed the whole of my tasting, and then I passed the whole of my theory, apart from one paper, which then I resat the following year, which I passed, and then I wrote the dissertation.
Oh, that's pretty good going, because a lot of people fail something.
Yeah, a few times.
I've got a guy who works for me who passed the tasting first time, no problems, but he just couldn't pass the theory at all.
Quite a few people do that, and then, which is great, because then they start again and they don't give up, and because I think it's really worthwhile. You throughout the process of learning about the wines, you need to have a really great global understanding of wine styles, winemaking around the world, from sparkling wine, dry wine, to sweet wines, whether it comes from Tuscany or Canada, and so that gives you a great global understanding of wines in general. And then from a theory point of view, it also gives you a really good understanding of what happens from the soils to the distribution systems, whether it's in Japan or so I think when you come out of the MW, and in a way, whether you pass or you don't pass, you go through the same process of learning, and I think you really walk away with the pretty sound global view on wine in general. And then the dissertation, for me, was a bit the hardest bit, because I had to write it in English, and as you know, I'm French.
Yep.
So I had
first
to do...
First French lady to get the Master's of Wine.
Yeah, first French woman, exactly, which was... that is really exciting on a sort of, personal level, and, because France needs more MWs, and I don't understand why we don't have more, but there's more communication, so hopefully there's a lot more students coming on board this year who are French, which is very encouraging. Because the MW is not just an English institution. It came out of England, but it's a truly global organization, and you have students from all over the world, which makes the experience and the learning even more exciting, because you meet some fantastic people. And I have friends. We started the MW together. Some have gone through and passed, some haven't, but they're still really good friends. You spend a lot of time on a Saturday morning, and you taste wines with all your friends. You discuss the wines, and then you do the same on a Sunday. Pre-exams, I spent all my weekends, evenings, mornings, tasting wines in my books. So it's pretty intensive. And then when I did when I wrote the dissertation, it took me probably 6 months of, pretty much dedicated studying and writing. 3 months pretty much part-time, and then I took 3 months off and I wrote my dissertation. But it was the biggest and the toughest part of the exam.
Sure, the dissertation.
The dissertation, yes.
Yeah, because I would have thought the tasting would be the hardest bit. I don't know, is that not too bad?
No, I think the tasting, once you really study all the styles of wines, all the classic regions in the world, and you travel a little bit and you taste extensively, and then you have your own way of writing your tasting notes, and then you can argument, your thought process. Because the what's really interesting about tasting with the MW technique is that you really think about all the options of winemaking, and there's a question which is posed, which could be, what is the grape variety? But you don't just say, oh, it's Chardonnay. You think about the options. Why is it Chardonnay? Why could it be something else? And it really makes you think about wine in a very different way. And you break down wine, and you look at the acidity level, what does that tell you in terms of origin, in terms of grape variety, the aromatic profile, what does that tell you, the use of oak, what does that tell you, the level of quality. Again, that gives you a clue as to which region it might come from. And then you pull all these elements together, and then you come to a conclusion. So, you know, wine is getting more and more diverse these days. And you have, obviously, wines produced all over the world. And you have, you know, new world, but cool regions. You might have a classic European region, but, you know, warmer climate. So it gets blurred, particularly sometimes at the top end, and particularly when you have then 10 years on the wine. So there are some frontiers that get blurred between styles or between grape variety. So you can only make the best educated guess.
Yeah.
Because it is a blind tasting, and you have to come up with an answer, whether it's to do with which year was it made in, where, what quality level. So you make your guess. But as long as you make a guess which draws on all the right sort of argument,
clues,
then that's it. Then you're done.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think people, you know, for me, doing the exam is to be able to develop your own voice, your own way of making decisions or tasting wine, but drawing on all the knowledge and all the whatever is happening around the world and making, you know, it is about developing an opinion.
And what about the written theory exams? I hear you have to learn lots and lots of science.
Yeah, there's which for me was a bit of a challenge because I studied literature and business. I had nothing to do with science, so trying to understand a little bit more about the science behind the winemaking was really interesting. But for me, that was, oh my god! So now I need to learn about formula, and you don't really need to learn about hardcore formula, but I think you know, at each step of winemaking, which goes back to, you know, which rootstock you might use, to perhaps, well, I don't know, a particular style of winemaking, which could be making wine in an amphora, for example. You just have to understand the options and what is going on. And because it's a lot of it is self-study, it means you have to, you know, talk a lot to winemakers or what people do, because you can help, you know, you can help yourself with books and you can study with books. But actually, what really happens is out there in the vineyard, and a lot of it is not written. And it's by talking to people that you begin to understand all the options available to make different styles of wines, for example.
Because the exam's in English, did you land up writing your study notes in English or in French? Because if you wrote it in English, it would help to be able to verbalize it in English, but if you wrote it in French, it might give you an assistance in terms of being able to be more articulate.
Sure. I did, for the actual, I never wrote anything in French. I write everything straight away in English. I mean, I've been here for about 13 years now, and I studied part of my studies was in Oxford and Manchester. So I don't think in French, I think in English. When I was writing the exam, everything was in English, and my wine vocabulary is in English anyway. And actually now I find it more difficult to express myself in French in the wine jargon. With the dissertation, the difficulty was more into academia. I was used to express myself in terms of a very academic, structured way, which a dissertation is all about in French. Mm. And I had to really think a lot about my wording, and you know, I had to get help from friends who I'd say, you know, can you, you know, how does that sound, or so there was input from people who are used to writing a lot more in very strict academia, because the dissertation is you know, there are very strict guidelines, and a comma here and there makes a big difference. Mm. So you have to not only get the whole material, analyze it, but then really express yourself in excellent English.
So the exams are made up of a tasting paper or two, a theory paper, and your dissertation. What was your dissertation on?
I did my dissertation on wine from my region, which is the Charente, and I was looking at the potential.
Just explain where that is.
Sure. So the Charente is in Cognac, southwest France. So it's a region which is one of the largest vineyards in France. I would say it's probably quite an industrial vineyard because the production goes into the making of cognac. And obviously, there are a few people who make some wines out of very classic grape varieties. There are border grape varieties. So you have Sauvignon Blanc, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, a little bit of Cabernet Franc, for example, used, some Sémillon, some Chenin Blanc, which is more from the Loire. But basically, it's a region which sits between the Loire and Bordeaux.
Mm-hmm.
So there is wine produced there. And I left my region about 13 years ago, and I've never really looked at wine because it's not really a region known for its, you know, its wine value.
Yeah.
So I wanted to revisit that. I wanted to get connected with my region and understand, you know, where wine was at and where it was going. The question that I posed in my dissertation was, can Vins du Pays Charentais compete on quality and value in the UK market? And the conclusion that I drew from my research was, yes, it can compete on quality. You know, the area is quite an expensive area to produce wine from. So the wines end up being quite expensive. So as a result, I don't think they can really compete on price in the UK market at this stage. And there's not enough volume being produced, so there's no economy of scale to be made from there.
What sort of other dissertations were people doing?
There were people looking at sweetness levels in Australian wines.
In the reds?
I don't know what she did on. I think it was maybe red or white, so I can't remember. I mean, there's been
a bit of sweetness in the red hides all sorts of things.
You said it, not me. Well, I can't actually just I can't think of other. There was another dissertation looking at zero dosage in champagne styles. Somebody did a dissertation on the various styles of sparkling wine in the UK. So, I mean, you're free to choose whatever topic you want, as long as it's very well focused, it's quite tight, and you can pose a question and answer it. And that's the key, and show analytical skill. And I have to say that even though for me it was, you know, it was a big challenge, I learned enormous amounts. And now I think about wine, or I can think about wine in a very, very disciplined way. And I learned a lot about stats, and I learned a lot about graphs. And so it was, you know, it was a great mental challenge.
Oh, excellent, excellent. And now that you've got it, it took you 4 years to get it.
Yep.
I think if you do it really well, you can do it in two. Is that right?
No, the best track record is 3 years.
3 years.
1 year for the first year, obviously 1 year for the second year, so you pass everything first time, and then you take 1 year for your dissertation. So that's the minimum, but it's quite rare. I mean, some people do it, of course, but that's you know, really bloody well going, I think.
Yeah. And what about the worst you can do? Because they eventually kick you off the course,
yes,
don't they?
Yes, I think you get three goes, and then if you don't pass after three attempts at the exams, then you have to wait. You have like a cooling off period, I think. I don't know. I guess I never really.
You need to worry about yourself.
I didn't worry about that. No, but you sort of go. You do your own journey, and you find, you know. So I don't really know the exact workings of how many goes you have, but I think it's three.
What was the highlight of the course for you?
It's the people I met and the friendship that I forged, because I think that is very special. And also there is a recognition there amongst people. So there is a camaraderie within the institute, which is really, really nice. So, you know, a lot of great friendships. And I think, you know, I feel I have a really great understanding of wine. I mean, you know, I wouldn't say I know everything there is to know about wine, because I don't think that's really possible anyway. But I think I have a good global understanding at a reasonable level. You know, I'm not an expert as a result of the MW into any particular area of wine. So I'm not an expert in soil. I'm not an expert in fermentation techniques. But I understand, I have a great global view. And with this classical training now that I've done all the studying, and now I've done all the studying about, you know, this global aspect, now I can focus on what I'm really passionate about, which is looking at organic biodynamics and essentially, you know, natural winemaking. So that's what I'm looking at the moment, you know, going on to the next stage. And it's, I guess, now that I've got this global view, it's kind of enabled me to sort of pick the area that really fascinates me and go for it, and that's what I'm doing at the moment.
So how are you doing that?
I'm putting together a book proposal. So I want to write a guide to natural wines for next year.
Mm-hmm.
I have a project of opening a natural wine bar restaurant next year in London. So I'm working on a business plan for that. That's it.
Okay, fantastic. All right, then. I know we've got to go off and
do taste some work.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you very much for your time, Isabel.
Yes, my pleasure. Thank you for having me back.
Not a problem. Cheers.
It was interesting what Isabel had to say, and I hope it all works out with her new business ideas. Maybe we'll have a chat to her in 3 years' time. Next week, we're going to be looking at the Wine Spirit Education's course, and now you can do it as an online course put together by David Swaddle. So we're going to be talking to Dave about his new WSCT course that you can do as a computer program. But next up, we have our mystery wine region. It was, of course, the Colchagua Valley. Here are the clues again. Colchagua Valley is a sub-region of Rapel in Chile's Central Valley. Located about 80 miles southwest of Santiago, it's about 75 miles long and 22 miles wide. It enjoys a long growing season with its dry, balmy Mediterranean climate, clear air and abundant sunshine. The annual rainfall, which occurs mostly in the winter months of May to August, is about 24 inches. Humidity is low and frost is unknown as the Pacific Maritime Breeze sweeps up the coastal mountain range into the Colchagua Valley. They cross the Rapel Lake and follow the river inland, tempering the effects of the hot summer sun and leading to cool, crisp nights. Colchagua's deep sedimentary soil contains a mixture of fine textured loam and loam silt, bordered by medium-sized textured volcanic soils in the foothills. Mounting snow from the Andes to the east feeds the river, which carries the snow into the valley, which can be used to irrigate the vines. Like the rest of Chile, Colchagua is free of phylloxera, and it's planted with about 18,000 hectares of vineyards, and the prominent varieties are Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Carmenere, Syrah, and Malbec, as well as in the whites, some Chardonnay, Semillon, and Sauvignon Blanc. Within Colchagua is the Apalta Valley, which produces some of Chilean's best Cabernet Sauvignons and Syrah for the reds. Okay, that pretty much ends the show. Just one more thing to go, and that's the quote. Okay, this week, it's another movie. Now, I'm not going to give you an impression after my poor Marlon Brando. In fact, a Mr. Manzel tweeted me on my Twitter account at Winescriber last week, saying that it was the worst impression he'd ever heard. So, no more impressions for me, obviously. But this week's quote is from another actor, another famous actor as well. It's from the movie Author, Author, starring Al Pacino, aka Ivan. And he asks a lady called Alice, "Why do you take aspirin with your champagne?" "Oh, champagne gives me a headache. I must remember to alternate fizz with aspirin next time." Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.